Thank you for joining us today on Positively Charged Biz. We are here to motivate, inspire, and support our listeners as they write their life stories. We are a proud founding member of the Real Disrupt Podcast Collaborative, and you can check out more awesome podcasts at realdisrupt.com. Hey everyone, I hope you're having a productive and positive day. I'm Laura Brandeo, and on today's show, we have a dynamic duo that has tackled the sensitive topic of office politics and corporate friction. I would like to introduce you to Jennifer Rock and Mike Voss. They spent two decades careening through corporate America and barely lived to write about it. As company journalists, speechwriters, and C-suite advisors, they stockpiled insider stories and cautionary tales. Both live near Minneapolis, where they share their communications expertise with companies, speaking to groups of all sizes, and share their perspective in publications like the Washington Post. Operation Cluster Puck is their second novel. And on Positively Charged Biz, we always like to start at the beginning. So please tell us, what inspired you to write your first book, BS Incorporated?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us, and I'd be happy to take that first question. So what inspired us to write that first book, BS Incorporated, was the worst meeting either of us had ever attended in our corporate careers, which had been quite lengthy at that point. It was an awful half-day meeting, and I'm sure your listeners have sat in that exact meeting where half of the people are paying attention. You know, people are playing games on their phones. The two corporate sponsors, the executives, are just at each other's throats. And literally the IT guy was sleeping in the corner. And that's actually, that scene starts Operation Cluster Puck. That is an absolutely real meeting that happened. And Mike and I escaped. I'll be honest, we went to a bar patio not too far away from our corporate offices. We started swapping stories and commiserating about all that was bad about our corporate jobs, and said someone should write a book about this. And we said, you know what? Why not us? And that's where the book genesis happened.
That's hysterical. And for someone that has been in corporate America for her whole career, I can completely appreciate, resonate, and connect with everything you just said. I think I've had that sleeping IT person, as a matter of fact. So definitely can connect with that. Okay, so what did you hope to accomplish by doing this? Okay, so now you came together, you said, man, we can't be the only people that have experienced this through our career. What did you hope to get out of writing it?
That's a great question. And I think there are really three things that we wanted to get out of it. First of all, we knew it would be a cathartic experience to write it, right? Mm-hmm. Just to get some of these things out and be able to share them with people. It felt good to write them down. It felt good to laugh at, you know, Jennifer would send me copy and I'd see what she wrote. And I was in that meeting. I remember that guy or that kind of thing. So that was just really fun and cathartic to do. The second thing is we really wanted to entertain people. And we were fortunate to, throughout our careers as communicators, you know, sometimes you have to write some really dry business stuff. But we were fortunate to work for a company that also allowed us to have a little fun with our communications. And that was something that Jennifer and I really bonded over early in our careers. Working together was to have fun. So when we first said we wanted to write a book, we said we can go the nonfiction route, all the lessons we've learned from our years in communications. And there's some great nonfiction books out there, but they're usually not that fun. We wanted to have fun. We wanted to entertain people. We wanted to give people a few laughs. And then the third thing is really that we wanted people to know that they're not alone. So our books also, our characters go through some really tough times. They have to lay people off. They have to let their friends go. They get in really difficult situations, put in those places by executives who don't necessarily care about their well-being. And we wanted people, you know, because that's real life. And we wanted people to read the books and say, oh my gosh. And we've heard this actually, Laura. People have said, it's like you snuck into my company, watched what I do every day, and then wrote a book about it.
Wow, that's great. And it's interesting. When I read Operation Cluster Puck, I was looking at it from both perspectives. So I'm looking at it as I'm one of the executives in the room. And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, would people look at us that way? And what can I learn from this book? Like, I actually approached it of, okay, maybe this is kind of all the executives should read something like this, because maybe we need to put things into perspective. So all the years that you guys have been in, you know, corporate communication, what are some of the things that you would actually like to share with executives to learn from? Because my audience, you know, we're in the mortgage business and I have many different layers of people. I have the individual entrepreneur producer, right? That is heads down, focused production. Then we have people that run large companies and large lenders. And then you have people that are just starting out and want to build a company and they want to do the right thing. They want to set the right path and they want to be able to learn these experiences. So what are some of the things that you wish maybe the executives would, you know, embrace?
Yeah. So, you know, we always talk about that we've got good executives and bad executives in our books. And there's a lot of bad executives because they're just so much fun to write about. So we put a lot of bad examples out there, but in Operation Cluster Puck, and that's the sequel to BS Incorporated, we really wanted to put a spotlight on some of the very good executives that we have worked with in our careers. And there's been a lot of them. And so the Thomas Milligan, who we call T-Mill, his nickname in Operation Cluster Puck, is a new executive to our fictional company. And he really was the amalgam. He was the combination of some really great executives that we have worked with in the past. And he's a tech guy, an IT guy, but he is so human in how he approaches business. And Mike and I have always said that, you know, although business has at its heart technology and finance and all the things and processes, it is a fundamentally human endeavor. And so we really embodied T-Mill, the character, that executive, with some really human qualities that are unfortunately pretty rare. Like, he never looks at a phone when he's talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. He doesn't take a laptop to a meeting. He doesn't sit at a meeting. He tends to walk around and pace, and he, you know, puts stuff on the whiteboard. And it's so intrapersonal, and so he pays so much attention to people no matter what level they're at. And he goes to the break room to make his own tea and talk to employees about what they're feeling. And that is so rare. Wow. To see an executive in the break room. And that was very much based on an executive that Mike and I had worked with in the past, that I remember the first time this actual executive walked into the break room and everybody was just like, oh, like everybody stiffens up and like, oh my gosh, like the executive's in the break room. Everybody stop talking. And it's like, that should not be rare. Yeah. People, you should interact with your people. You should talk to them. You should ask what they're thinking and what they're feeling, and not have them feel like there's a trust issue to do that. So yeah, so it's, you know, we tried to pepper the books with some really easy things that executives can do. And I think that's a good one. And it's, like I said, it's a really human thing.
Yeah. And that's vital. I mean, because sometimes, you know, I mean, I've seen it in my career. Sometimes executives get to this point that they forget how they got there. You know, sometimes they get put in this bubble somewhere, right? And they forget what it was like coming up throughout there and why they're there, right? We all know we're there to serve our people, who in turn will serve our clients and our customers and take care of them. And the moment that you lose that, that's when everything shifts, right? So thank you for sharing that, because I think that's a very, very important piece of it. It really, really is. Now, we were actually, so tell me some of the feedback that you got. So you heard, wow, this is relatable. This is something that I experienced. Have you had people actually say they kind of acted on it, that they did something after reading both of the books or one of the books? You know, did you see some feedback from that, from either perspective?
You know, I think the first thing that we heard, especially from people in executive roles, were, and this is more from the first book, where we had probably a little, we probably tilted a little more on the side of poor executives or managers that didn't do a good job. They would say things like, is that really what I look like? Oh. Is that really what you thought of me? And so it is my hope, at least, that that they took that to heart. And I think from the middle manager perspective, we talked to a lot of people who maybe looked at their organization a little bit differently about how they get treated and whether they get treated as an individual and as a human being. And I know people questioned whether they were in the right role and whether maybe they should start looking around and find a job where they're treated the way they should be treated.
Wow. That's pretty intense. I mean, that's a whole nother perspective. Now, I will tell you, I think I know the answer to this, but for the audience purpose, you guys, when you wrote this, there's characters within the book that actually mirror some of you, right? Is that correct? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So no character that appears in the book is completely wholesale, you know, plucked from real life and put in the book. But our two characters, our main characters, Will and Anna, have very different approaches to their careers and their lives and their workplaces. And Anna and I share a fair amount of DNA, especially early in my career. And Mike certainly shares some commonalities with Will, our main character. Certainly, they make some very different choices than we have made in our careers and our lives. But you know, there's just something to be said for writing what you know. And it was, that was like Mike said about the catharsis of you know, actually putting some things on paper, man, you know, go back and write about yourself and your perspective and your attitude of how you were when you first entered your first big corporate job. That was the experience that I had writing, you know, putting Anna, early Anna on paper. Cathartic, but also very frightening.
I guess. to think about,
you know, being thrown into a big company and having a certain level of confidence and then to have that pretty much picked away and destroyed by a very big and dumb but well-meaning company.
Yeah. And I know your story from, I did some research prior to our discussion, and I need you to share that story about the executive with the look on your face.
Oh.
Because I don't know, that one blew me away. And I think it's very important, especially I lead a women's mortgage network group, and I'm into empowering young ladies within my industry in a very male-dominated industry. So I think it's important to share this story because it will resonate.
Okay. Yep. Absolutely true story. And it is almost wholesale written right in our first book, BS Incorporated, with our character of Anna, who, again, this happened to me earlier in my career, where I had been butting heads with a boss at the time. And the boss, I just had this feeling, you know, just didn't care for me. I think because I was outspoken and because when he would say, I would like your feedback, I would offer it and offer it honestly to him. And then felt like I got punished for it. I got punished for offering the honest feedback when he had said that's what he wanted, but it's not really what he wanted. He wanted people to agree with him. And so the conversation that I had with him, and again, ripped right from the headlines, right from real life that's in the book, is that he sat across from me and said, I don't like it when you make that face. And I said, I don't know what face I'm making. Like, and then you're like hyper aware of like, what am I doing? And he's like, I can tell when you don't agree with me because you make that face, and I need you to work on not making that face anymore. And it wasn't, and again, think of the ridiculousness of that conversation. It wasn't, it seems like we have a differing perspectives. Let's talk about that. Or let's get to the root cause, or do we have a conflict we need to work through? Or, you know, let's talk about, you know, why I think we should do this and you should think you should do this. Like, tell me more about your point of view. There was none of that. It was just, I know you don't agree with me and I don't like it when I can tell. And so absolutely true conversation. I didn't have any idea how to respond to that in the moment. And not shocking. I mean, I wasn't very much longer at that job after that.
Yeah, I think I would have a pretty difficult time with that. And that really is a good point of how do you respond to something like that when someone says to you, you're making a face,
Well, that's the thing is, like most of what we write in our books too, I mean, again, time and distance are lovely things away from a job and away from, you know, a situation. In the moment, it can just be absolutely awful. But after a number of years, you look back and go, okay, actually, that was kind of funny.
That was so ridiculous.
And again, and then you understand the source of our humor in these books is like, yeah, you're going to cringe a little bit, but you're going to laugh at the absolute ridiculousness of the situation because it was true.
Right. And I have to tell you, I think it's refreshing that in the year 2020, we can have this conversation because just as I said in your bio, it's kind of interesting that years ago, you really didn't have conversations about this. It was kind of like, that's just what it is. And you suck it up. And if you don't want to suck it up, you go out on your own or you work for a different, you know, structure of a company. And that's what you did, right? But now I think the glory of all of this is that there's enough time has passed and, you know, there's been funny movies made and there's different, you know, podcasts having these conversations and books and things like that. And I think that's very good for everyone to be able to have these open conversations. And I do think it is maybe in a small way, but it's changing a little bit. And listen, if it's not changing enough, well, then everybody has an option, right? Maybe it's not the right place for them at that moment. That doesn't mean it's wrong for someone else. Everyone can make their own choices, right? Yep. But these conversations, I think, again, I think it's great for both sides. I think it's great for people to determine what works best for them. And it's also important for executives to realize sometimes you got to get over yourselves. And sometimes you have to realize you're not, you know, you're not the king of the castle, so to speak. It takes the whole team and the whole company to build something. So absolutely. I think that's great. So let me understand. Tell me a little bit about your backgrounds. You know, what did you guys do before all of this? And then two part, then the second piece. Okay, so now you've had this ridiculous meeting. You decide to do this. At that moment, you guys broke off and then started your own company. So what was that like? You know, going off on your own and now you're like, okay, here's a whole new perspective. So both sides, give me some background and tell me about that moment.
Okay, I'll take the background side, Jennifer. You want to pick it up from there. So separately, growing up in completely separate communities and not knowing one another, Jennifer and I realized much later in life when we met that we both shared the dream of wanting to write fiction, write a novel. So my story is when I was a kid, I lived out in the country. We had long school bus rides into town, and I would work all week on a story about all the kids on the school bus and the bus driver. And on Friday afternoons on the ride home, I would read it to everybody.
Oh, that's awesome.
I didn't realize at the time that meant that I wanted to write fiction for a living, but when other kids were shooting spitballs and stuff, I was writing. You know, that's just what I wanted to do. Jennifer, I think your story is that you submitted a story or a haiku or something to your elementary school newsletter. Is that what it is?
It was first grade and it was a haiku.
Wow. Yep, my first grade.
My first taste at published authorship. Yeah.
Awesome.
And so, you know, of course, as life goes on, you sort of steer your education and your career in that direction. So I went to school for advertising, and I became an advertising copywriter. And Jennifer went to school for journalism, and you know, so we're both in that writing arena. And as our careers wound around, we ended up working in internal communications, and that, again, separately, we found that's really what we loved was, you know, still having the ability to communicate and write, but to engage in an audience and really help them buy into the mission of a company. And then that's where we crossed paths. It was actually at Best Buy Company's headquarters, which is here in suburban Minneapolis. And I was there for 15 years and Jennifer was there for 12. And we really kind of became kindred spirits on the communications team. We were able to try a lot of new and different things. And as Jennifer said, we had that one meeting on the patio and went to the bar, and Pinky swore that we, you know what, let's take all these stories that we've been stockpiling and write a book about it.
And then
we actually, it was a tumultuous time during the corporation that we worked for, and we actually worked our way, strategized our way out of our jobs.
Oh.
We ended up with severance packages, and the severance was actually kind of an advance for us. It was an opportunity for us to step back and finish this book that we had been working on kind of at, you know, nights, flights, and weekends, and actually put some dedicated time to really realizing this dream and publishing this book. And so we took a little time to do that. And then, you know, you step out of the corporate world for a little bit. It was an opportunity to say, what do we want to do here? And, you know, let's try something on our own. And so opened our own communications agency, two-person agency. And then for 6 years served, clients on our own, in a communications capacity, and took all of that joint, experience that we had had, doing, widespread communication. I mean, Best Buy was a huge company, 170,000 employees across the world, and complicated, communications infrastructure, took all that experience and then put that into, you know, our own consulting agency. And it's kind of ironic. If you read our first book, BS Incorporated, the villains are the consultants that come in. And that's exactly similar, what...
That's like Office Space, right? It's like the movie Office Space when a bad consultant comes in.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we became. We're the consultants that had been the villains in our first novel. But we'd like to think that we approach the work a little differently in our own space.
I mean, obviously, we all know there are times in a business when you need people to come in and have that outside perspective. And sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees, and you need somebody to be able to come in and take away, you know, the way it's always been done, right? You could take that out of the equation. So I think consultants play a very vital role in the business world. Absolutely.
But again, it's just so much fun to write about the bad ones. So and that's what we did, because it was just fun. So no offense to any consultants out there, or good executives, or anybody else that we skewer through the book. We are all, it's all full opportunity skewering of everybody we ever came across in the corporate world. So yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've checked out your website, your company website, and I even found on there, I saw your workplace bingo. And for me, I have to tell you that I got a chuckle out of, because believe it or not, I've done something like that at my company. And the way I implemented it, when we first went remote, we had remote, my God, the first year I rolled it out was 2010, which actually was ahead of the curve. Most people were not remote back then. But in my industry, we were limited to one little section, and I needed to expand my workforce, you know, outside. So when we rolled it out, my biggest thing was, how do I keep people connected? How do I keep them engaged? Because I can't, you know, I can't constantly be next to them. And one of the things we did was we came up with like some type of bingo game where we all played, and my God, it was great. But let's speak a little bit about that. Tell me about why, you know, I can tell you guys like to have fun. You like to show companies that it doesn't have to all be processes and everything in the box. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it. That's exactly why we created those kinds of things, the workplace bingo and some of the other artifacts that we put on our websites to demonstrate, you know, help our prospective clients understand who we are and how we approach our work. We don't take ourselves too seriously. Okay. And one of the things that we talked about when we left Best Buy and to work on our own, and we're both grateful for our time at Best Buy, but the opportunity to choose the kinds of companies and the kinds of people that we could work with was really important to us as well. And we're all, you know, we all do some things and say some things that we look back on and say, boy, that made me sound like just a corporate robot or whatever it is, right? And so the more we can help companies and prospective clients understand that we're going to approach this in a very human way. We're going to help you maybe look at yourself in a way that's not hypercritical, but it is, you know, allows you to maybe laugh at yourself a little bit and say, gosh, we can do this a little bit better. And then also, you know, to connect the business to the books, because the books we feel have a fair amount of humor in it. So we're just trying to build a little bit of a bridge there too, between the business and the books, because while they are separate entities, you still get Mike and Jennifer, regardless of whether you buy a book or hire us to help with your communications.
Right. So what kind of clients do you work with? Like what is a example of the, you know, are they little, are they bigger, are they medium, are they all of the above? Are you looking to work with them on communication strategy? Is that the prime focus? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, our careers are built around communication strategy in some fashion. And the thing is that whether you are a one person consulting firm or the biggest privately held company in the world, you need good communication strategy. And we've worked with both of those. In fact, we have worked to understand how to talk about what they do to their customer base that they're building. You know, there's a measure of external communications attached to that. It's really hard to tell your own story, whether you are a one-person company or a huge global corporation. I know when, you know, Mike and I were putting our first company website for our own company, I mean, we are experts at communications. Right. We had a hard time telling our own company story. It's hard to pick the nuggets of the story that will make you interesting and appealing to a customer. So certainly I've taught, you know, worked with little companies like that. But we have worked with companies like Cargill, for instance, mm-hmm. just off the top of my head, that is the largest privately held company in the world here in the Minneapolis area. And again, you know, it's, they all need communication strategy. It's just the complexity of that, the bureaucracy behind it, the approval process, and how it's either tied to a work stream or a great organizational change that's going on in an organization that size, the more that good, clear, straightforward communication is needed. It really is a driver of so many things, including really tangible things like employee productivity. You know, to know why they should be sticking around and why they should be still doing hard work for a company often comes from the clarity of communication that says, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's the goal that we're shooting for. And that can be really, really difficult to communicate.
So I guess from thinking about what you just said, so you're saying not only your external image to your clients, but also your internal mission, you know, and bonding with your own team for them to understand where you're going, what's the why, right? Understanding their why and understanding why they should be getting behind you as you lead them, you know, forward, right? So both mm-hmm. internal and external.
Yeah. And I would
absolutely. And Mike, go ahead, Mike.
I think probably the biggest piece of that is understanding how they and their contributions contribute mm-hmm. to achieving that goal and achieving whatever it is the company's trying to accomplish. Because I think that's the piece that a lot of companies often miss. They say, here's what we're doing. We're going to expand into this market, or we're going to launch this new product or service. Here's why we're doing it. But they stop before they say, and here's how you and your team really make that happen. Bring that to life for our customers, for our shareholders, for our communities. And I think that's what people want is, I want to know I'm making a difference. I want to know that the work I'm doing matters, especially when that work is tough, grueling, fighting through bureaucracy. You hope it matters in some way. And I think that's what Jennifer and I really strive to do in our communications, is to really help the people on the front lines, no matter what kind of business it is, see that their contributions matter.
Right. And I would think, I mean, right now we're recording this in quarantine. We're all quarantined at the moment. So I would think that let's use this point in time. Okay. Because we know this point in time is like no other, right? We've never in our entire lives ever been through this situation. We know there's companies that are struggling. There are difficult decisions being made across America right now in businesses, right? Mm-hmm. So give us an idea of the importance of that communication in terms of how do you deal with those difficulties when you have your team and these things are happening that maybe it's not a positive light.
Yeah, I'll give one example, and then Mike, please weigh in with another. We have no shortage of examples here, but in times like these, when employees are being furloughed or laid off, or their pay is being deferred for a while, a very real and good principle of communication is that anything having to do with a person's livelihood, their job, or their compensation should be communicated one-on-one in person. That's impossible right now.
Right.
So think about your communication channels right now and how that has been affected by the quarantine and by the stay-at-home orders and everyone working from home. this has been a very tumultuous time to get leaders very comfortable with technology, and also being able to translate that very real human one-on-one conversations that need to happen about very sensitive topics like jobs and compensation, and to do that sitting in front of a screen. And that seems wrong, but it's what we have. And so there is an element of communication training and comfort level that needs to go into that. And also just, you know, as we've always said, in those difficult conversations, they're going to be awful for everyone involved. And you just have to get past that step. You are not going to make this better if you are affecting someone's pay or their job future or their career. And so there's a psychological aspect to that as well. Like I said, this gets very complicated very fast. Yeah. And it also just doesn't feel good when it's being done via Zoom or a call. But at least we can still look at each other and look each other in the eyes and have these honest conversations. But, you know, honestly, communication just doesn't feel good right now. And it especially doesn't feel good when again, we're dealing with some really difficult business topics right now.
Yeah. But I think that's great advice. I think that's great advice of, you know, and you're right. There's a lot of leaders that aren't very comfortable putting themselves on camera, you know, and because that's just not what they've had to do in the past. And you're right. At the end of the day, it is a difficult topic and you do have to have that eye contact and just the same as if you were sitting across from them. So I think that's great advice. I think you're right. There's no magic answer. There's no way to, you know, to make it better, but at least keep it in mind and be human and have that connection.
Yes.
And speaking of connection, so another thing that I heard you guys mention on part of my research was about the two different paths that you guys took. And I have to admit, Jennifer, that I, of course, connected with your story because maybe because we're both female and maybe I very much connected to yours. And Mike, obviously, I've heard many times before in terms of your path of where, and I'll let you guys say it, okay? I don't want to actually say it, but I know that both of you had a different path leading to where you made movements through corporate America. And I think it's important to bring this to light also because it's very interesting to me, the similarity. And again, Mike's, I want you to touch on the how you networked and you built those relationships. And I know, Jennifer, you had a different path. So if you guys can kind of share that part of it, because I think that's another important component of building our careers and kind of what, and even what you learned from it. And if you would follow it again, if you went back, or if you would say, no, that worked for me and I would do exactly the same thing again.
Sure. Well, I can start. We sort of built these same characteristics into our characters, yeah. Will and Anna. But for me, I was not a person who really had a defined career path and even really knew exactly what I wanted to do beyond my love of being creative and writing. And so when I was an advertising copywriter, I really on a whim threw a resume out to Best Buy for this internal communications job. And I liked stereo equipment and television. So I thought, hey, I'll do that. And I got into that role and I really liked the stuff, the stuff that we sold. And that gave me a little bit of an advantage, I think, in throughout my career there, because I was really, really understood what the customer was looking for when they walked into a Best Buy store. But I really didn't think, oh, I want this job and then I want that job and that kind of thing. What I focused on was building relationships with the people that I worked with and the people who were above me and the people that led other departments. And that led me to the next job and that led me to the next job. And I was fortunate to be in a position where I was very often offered those roles. I didn't have to think much about it. And eventually it got to a point where I was leading the internal communications department for this $50 billion company. I had a team of 30 people. Never in my wildest dreams, not that I wanted it or didn't want it. I had just never thought about it. Again, I count myself very fortunate, Laura, to be able to have advanced in my career that way, but I was not someone who planned it. And so there was a day where I woke up and looked around and said, is this what I want? And, right. and I think I'm not alone in that. I think a lot of people do that, whether they're advancing in their careers or sometimes stuck in a role that they don't like. You wake up one day, and I know that's a little dramatic way of saying it, but over the course of time, you start to wonder, is this what I want? Is this what I should be doing? It was fortunate for me that I had, you know, Jennifer as sort of my partner in crime at that time. We were talking about writing a book. So that gave me something else to think about and gave me an opportunity to think about what I really wanted in my career. But for the first 15, 20 years, I didn't think much about it. And I think, again, that's probably fairly common and the exact opposite of what Jennifer has.
So, yeah. So I'll jump in from my perspective. And again, like Mike said, you know, our main characters in our books share a lot of DNA with us. And so Anna's career trajectory, which I think we call the patent pending, Anna Reed career trajectory, which was to change jobs approximately every 3.2 years. And that was absolutely that is my career trajectory. I had absolutely scoped that out. I had plans for, you know, I was going to be a chief communication officer by the time I was 45. And here was my path to get there. And I would spend about 3 years at a company. Because that would be either the time I would get bored or I would kind of top out at a certain title and know that I had to move on. I wanted to get experience in lots of different industries. And like, I had a plan. And I think that was at great expense for the, it was at expense to the interpersonal relationships around me, because when you know you're going to be a short timer, if you can call 3 years short time at a company anymore, I knew I was only going to be there for 3 years. So why bother making long-term relationships? I'm not going to be around that long. So didn't spend a lot of time early in my career establishing relationships with coworkers. Didn't spend a lot of time, being politically savvy with other departments or leaders, because I just needed to steamroll my way into what I needed to do and get ahead. And whether part of that's, you know, the thought that if I was to form relationships, that would be seen as maybe weak or too little touchy-feely or soft, that I just wanted to steamroll ahead as a leader. I don't know. I think a lot of women probably follow that kind of idea, but to be honest, I mean, you know, I've never considered ambition a bad word. I mean, I've always been an ambitious type A type person. And so I had that moment, like Mike is saying, where, you know, I woke up one morning going, I think everything I have done and the 24/7 nature of my career, and I've always, you know, put aside the personal life to build the career, but am I actually happy? And I did that at the expense of my marriage, got a divorce. I did that at the expense of probably really great relationships I would have had with colleagues along the way, and probably other personal friends and family that I set aside for the sake of my career. And certainly, so like Mike said, you know, I might have been very planful about my career, and I don't have regrets about the narrow lane of where I got to, and I'm incredibly happy in my career right now and the experience that I learned, but where I would have done things differently is on the life side of the work-life balance. I really shortchanged some things to achieve what I thought I needed to achieve to make myself happy. So there was a redefining of happiness that I had to have that was hard. It was hard mid-career to say,
lesson, right?
Wait a second. Yeah. It's a tough lesson. And, you know, to have somebody sit across from me and say, what does success look like to you? And to know that it's something I can define for myself and not let, you know, an industry or a marketplace define for me. It's like, wait a second, what does success look like for me? What does happiness look like? And those are really heavy themes, but that's some of the things we wanted to get across in Operation Clusterpuck, are those choices that you can make. And by the way, yay, we get to make choices. We get to make choices in our lives, in our careers, and you know, be purposeful in both your work and your life. And I think, you know, again, it's a heavy topic and we try to do it lightly and with some humor, but those were really important lessons for both me and Mike as we went through our careers.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, obviously all of us are people that have been in the industry for 15, 20 years in corporate America. You know, I think back, and you know, I mentioned to you my youngest son's name is Mike, but you know, I watch my grown children that are recent college graduates and all of that, and you think back of how do you guide, you know, that wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know, 20-year-olds that are ready to take on the world and ready to do whatever it is, right? And of course, it's unfortunate that a lot of people that have been in business 20 years are like, give up. So sorry. All your dreams are not going to work out. Now, I'm the complete opposite of that because I'm with you, Jennifer and Mike. I'm you can be anything and anyone you ever want. And even if you got off the path and it's wrong, get back on the path. I mean, it's okay. Yeah. There's no timeline. It's not make a mistake. You'll learn. It's okay. Mm-hmm. There's no direct path to whatever happiness or success means for you. Because like you just said, Jennifer, that's a very personal thing. My definition is certainly different than yours and vice versa, because it's all going to look different. But I guess let's use that as a question. Both of you, what would be your piece of advice to the recent college graduate? The person that's ready to take on the world with, they've got this piece of paper in whatever they went to school for and they're ready. What's that piece of advice?
That's a great question. You know, I think I would say a couple things. I would say, you know, have somewhat of a plan, probably more than I had. I think it would serve them well, but be flexible in that plan as well, because new doors open, new paths emerge. So don't get too fixated on a single plan. You will miss opportunities both on the personal side and on the professional side. So remain open and flexible in that path. And then the second piece of advice I always give in these types of interviews is to take your work seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously.
I like it.
Yeah. And I echo on the flexibility of the plan. I had a plan, but I was not flexible in that. And you got to be nimble and you got to take the opportunities. You're setting yourself up for disappointments if you have so strict of a plan that you feel like you can't, you know, step off the path a couple of times or take an interesting exit if you see that in your path. And I would say, you know, this is really similar. I think this is a greater life lesson than I meant it to be, but I have an employee right now who is new to the work at home thing and also young and ambitious and really driven. And I told her every day you need to stop working. And I didn't mean that as like a life lesson. I meant literally like pick a
have
dime,
a
like at five.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's 5:30 working from home. That's hard. Right. So I'm like at 5:30, turn off your email. I'm not going to text you like stop working and then go do something else. It's way too easy to just keep working when we're working from home. And now that I think about that, it's like, that's not really bad life advice either. You need to stop working sometimes. And I think throughout my career, I didn't. And it was too many weekends and too many nights that I remember staying up late working. I remember working ahead on things. I don't remember what those things are. They're not important anymore, but I do remember some of the things, you know, some of the conversations I missed out on, some of the fights I had around that I was still working, you know, some of the things that, again, that had I just stopped working, I probably would have had a more well-rounded life for a whole, you know, section of my life there. So stop working sometimes. That's all I have to say.
I honestly think that's where we end. I think that's it. That's the drop. We're dropping the mic right there. That's the message, because I think you're right. I think especially now that we are working from home, it's very important to have that separation. It is too easy to just go back and, oh, let me just respond to that. Let me just go check on that. I think you're 100% accurate. And I think that's a good message for everyone. So I want to know, how do people get the books, both the books, give the names, you know, speak about that, your website. I actually did like some of the great things you have on the website, so I thought they were awesome. Thanks. So please, social media, everything. How do we follow?
Sure. So our books are available anywhere online that fine quality books are sold. So Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, all those places. You can also go direct to our website, which is rockandvossbooks.com, and order direct from our distributor. That also links to our business website as well. Jennifer, you want to talk a little bit about social media?
Yeah, you know, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, and you can get links to all of those things also from our rockandvossbooks.com website. We direct routes to our, you know, strange happenings and weird thoughts that we put on Twitter and out there on social media.
Ooh, great. Now you've got me intrigued. Right, we always
right now
like
I've,
that.
Right now I've just, yeah.
That is awesome.
And right now it's just all about work from home and the weird things about working from home. That's what I've been on Twitter lately, because we're all in the same boat. We all just have to keep each other's spirits up.
Love that. Thank you. You guys have been awesome. This is a great topic. I have to tell you, this was very intriguing to me, and thank you so much. We wish you all the best. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great day. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Positively Charged Biz. I'm Laura Brandeo, and we are here to motivate, inspire, and support our listeners as they write their life stories. If you have an inspiring story, please email me at laura@positivelycharged.biz. And remember to subscribe to hear more great guests. And connect to us on Facebook at Positively Charged and Instagram at Positively Charged Podcast. Until next time, we wish you a positive day.